Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night with one of my favorites, Jasmine Savoy Brown's here. I've wanted you on this show. Feels like for so long, but I feel like
you.
It's just since Scream 6, even though I had seen some of your work before, but you spoke to my soul. I mean, Scream 5. You spoke to my soul in Scream 5.
Well, thank you. I give all the credit to the writers.
They're a special group.
Yeah.
Them and Radio Silence, I adore them, and I'm very thankful they are at the helm of the Scream films.
And I'm so excited for them, this new project they're doing with Melissa.
I don't know
anything about that. That is such a surprise, but I'm excited for
them. All I care is that it's them, it's her, and apparently there's a monster involved. I'm all for that. So the first order of business on Collider Ladies Night. Yeah, touch it. Things fall apart, but it's okay. They go back together.
Do I get to?
You do. So this is our Ladies Night Dice Tower. I have 8 random questions here. You get 3 rolls on the tower, and whatever you roll, that's where we start.
No, that's scary. I don't like it.
They're fun. Okay. They're fun. Some are fun. Some are serious acting questions. Wait, you need to put it in
there. Oh, put it in there? Oh.
It's a dice tower.
I don't know what a dice tower is.
Honestly, if
I'm not a gamer girl.
If I didn't own this, I wouldn't know either. Okay.
That's what I had anyway.
What number do you see?
5.
Okay.
I
always get confused because I wonder if it looks different on my side compared to yours.
Oh,
is
right.
Is that how a die works?
Well, no. I don't think so. I'm trying to, what number would maybe look like? Because if it was 6 versus 9.
No, like if it's like.
Then.
If it's like that.
Then 7.
And like, oh, I guess it's still.
There's only one top.
It's still the same. You're right. It's still the top.
You're looking at the side. Well, in that case, then I have 1, 5, 7, 9, 8, 3.
I'm so used to playing this game virtually where I'm totally in control of the tower that the first time I let somebody else roll, I'm like, how do I do this anymore? So we're starting with 5. You got a very serious acting question to start here. This is favorite, least favorite. I want your favorite part of the acting process, like putting your costume on for the first time, hitting set for the first time, but then also not necessarily your least favorite, but the part of the process where, you know, you see room to grow for yourself and can try something new.
Wow, we really are jumping right in. Okay,
you
favorite. But you wrote it.
And then picked it.
Jesus Christ. In that case, I actually saw 4.
I can do that one next to you.
No, like that. We're getting them all anyway. Okay, my favorite part and my least favorite. Let's start with the negative.
Okay.
Wait, so least favorite part of the acting process or where I have room to grow? Those are two very different
questions. That's the thing. It's not necessarily, like, it looks nicer when I write favorite, least favorite in our little graphic, but it's not necessarily a negative thing. It's like a place in the process where you can experience something new.
You know what? Yes. Okay. I could prep sooner. I could do some of my prep earlier. It depends on the project. Like, for example, like Green Bank, right? I have this script so far in advance. We don't even have a start date yet, but I'll have my lines memorized for, like, I approach movies like I approach plays. I'm going to memorize that thing back to front, page by page, boom. TV, it's a lot easier to, like, save learning lines until in the car ride on the way to work because I know the character so well. I'm not like that I'm like, okay, I know who she is. I know what motivates her. I can show up and just like kind of be present and see what happens. So it's sometimes better if the lines aren't like so cemented. But then it's mostly that I just get all panicky. I've never gone to work not prepared. I'm always prepared, but it's just that then I'll wake up and be like, oh my God, I don't know my lines.
For what it's worth, I waver every single interview I do, whether I should be prepared to a T where I know my questions word for word.
Or if you should be off the cuff.
Or if I should just like chill out. Right. Because then I feel beholden to that
exactly.
And less likely to go down a path that might be interesting that I didn't expect.
Exactly. Thank you. And I guess that does that kind of, yeah, I'd say my favorite parts of the process are the same as my least favorite, and that, like, I love prep. I love that time when the character and all the ideas and the whole inner world is just mine, and I haven't shared it with anyone yet. Like, I haven't showed up to work and shared it with the director or shared it with the other actors, and no one knows, and it's private. But then I also love getting to work and that getting thrown out the window and just seeing what happens in the moment. Like, I'm selfish, and then I'm collaborative.
I like that way of looking at it.
Private and then public.
I'm ruining my game because now I have a follow-up question because you brought up Green Bank. What is an infant sleep trainer exactly?
Oh, it's a person who – it's like exactly what it sounds like. They help train your infant to get to sleep. So
is
like,
that like a common thing?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's common, but it is a thing. Like some babies just have a much harder time going down or sleeping through the night, and the parent or caregiver is like, I need sleep.
Yeah.
Unfortunately – they can afford to then hire someone so they can sleep for a week uninterrupted, and this person is like waking up with your baby or teaching you how to engage with your baby to help them sleep through the night.
This is why I have pets and my sister has the human children, because I like to sleep. Not that the cats let me sleep, but.
Yeah, no.
All right. Do you dare roll again?
yay. If it's five again, I swear to God.
We can defer to four. I like four.
Okay. One.
One.
Do you see
okay.
one?
Yeah, one's fine. I do see one.
Do you understand now?
I'm glad.
That there's a top?
I'm glad. Well, it's also because there's like angle. Like, do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean. I'm being a brat. I do see what you mean.
But you are right, and I'm wrong in this case. This is survival skills.
Okay.
You are in a Yellow Jackets type situation. You're stranded in the wilderness with a bunch of your friends. I want your greatest asset, the thing that you bring to the group that could help everybody survive, but then I also want your greatest weakness, the thing that would do you all in.
Oh, God. My greatest asset, my sense of humor. I'd keep everyone laughing. But an actual skill set, do I have any? I don't know. I'm a good rallier.
Okay.
Like, I could, like, get
it's
everyone
important.
Together to talk about what we're going to do. Do I know what we're going to do? No. But I'll start the conversation.
Everyone always underestimates group morale in these situations, and that's key.
Group morale or group something else. Word I can't think of.
What's like a seemingly silly thing that would stop you from surviving, like that type of situation, like a zombie outbreak? Like, I always think that, like, I go to the gym. I can run. I'd be able to hold my own, but then I'd be wearing contacts and I'd run out of solution and then I wouldn't be able to see.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I also have contacts.
There's no toothpaste in Yellow Jackets. That's the other thing that stresses me out.
I know.
I'm terrified of the dentist.
Why?
Because it's scary.
You had bad experiences as a kid?
Honestly, I don't know. I think that when
I was... It's a common fear.
It is a very common fear. I think it's when I was a teeny child going to a pediodontist. They always used to do the paint on Novocaine and never the shots. I don't actually remember the pain, but
I've never even heard of that.
I don't remember ever getting a shot of Novocaine, and I know I had fillings and baby teeth as a kid.
Paint on Novocaine?
Yeah, where they would like paint it. It's like when they give you the shot of Novocaine now, first they'll paint it on that spot of your gum and then give you the shot.
Oh.
But I don't remember ever getting a shot when I was a kid.
Oh, no, like they just forgot that step.
Forgot it repeatedly.
Oh, no. Well, don't worry. You don't have to go to the dentist today. Contacts also. Like, you know, here's what I'd be worried about. It's that time of the month and I'm not even worried about pads, tampons, Diva Cup, whatever. I get so hungry. I would steal everyone's rations and then I'd get beat up.
You're stealing the bear meat.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, I need to eat when I'm hungry once a month.
I saw a video on TikTok. This is so random and not part of my Dice Tower game, but I saw a video on TikTok that made me think of the pee poo bucket thing. Because everyone thinks it's you.
Right.
Like you were sleepwalking and doing it. And someone was, they were doing like an icebreaker activity with a bunch of colleagues. And it was like something that, like a secret thought that embarrasses you. And one person said, I have like this nightmarish scenario where in like real life, in waking life, when I'm pooing, that really I'm actually dreaming and like pooing somewhere I shouldn't. And I was like by myself cackling over this. And all I could think about is like, that's what's happening to Thaisa.
Oh, no. Yeah, I've had those scary dreams before. Or, like, you're peeing in a dream and you wake up and you're like, oh, my God.
It's like, that's probably one of my worst nightmares, which is probably why I get up 500 times during the
night. This is actually a show talking about your worst nightmares.
I have a question. Why did I do
this to myself? Which question? Six.
Six?
No, that's, I'm asking you. What's my sixth question? What is your most emotional fear?
My most emotional
afraid
fear
of
is
intimacy. Are you afraid of
just keep
being
going?
Left behind. This is
like really dark now.
Yeah, it's really I'm
afraid of anything bad happening to my family, and I'm afraid of failing in my career. I'm saying that with like a big smile and
How
laugh on my face.
Here?
I don't know, but now I want yours. What's like like a real deep emotional fear?
That I will mess up.
You have to match mine now. I just went dark.
Okay. You want a real one?
Okay.
That I've finally met someone I really love, and I'm too messed up, and I'm going to destroy it.
I understand that. The twist on that is if you don't feel that way, it might not be as important to you.
Hey.
And it might be a sign you don't care as much as maybe you should.
And I can say the same about you and your career and how much you love your family.
You're right. It's
this
true,
This is actually
though.
Therapy
it's
night.
It's true. I like it. Now we got to, what is it, six?
Six
oh, this
or
one,
nine.
This one's fun.
Okay.
There is no nine. Sometimes I forget that too. This is slumber party.
Okay.
What three famous people would you invite to your slumber party?
Do they have to be alive?
No.
Okay.
Whoever you want.
Well, how about Whitney Houston when she was like 20? You know what? I'd be really curious to talk to Jesus. Like, what was up with that? You know what?
Fair
I'll
enough.
Throw Moses in there because I just learned a lot more about Jewish history and how Passover came to be, and I didn't know how important Moses was to them. So Moses, Jesus, and a 20-year-old Whitney Houston.
I was a Hebrew and Judaic studies major in college, and I probably can't tell you like half as much as what you know.
Do you remember where the word Passover comes from? Like why it's called Passover?
Yes, I do.
Because of
that.
The lamb's
that
blood
I know.
And passing
I feel
over
like
the...
I learned that in Hebrew school.
I just
back
learned that
in the
yesterday.
Day.
Thanks, Benchtopia.
I have like a whole major where I learned all this stuff for so many years of my life, and it just goes in one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
I even studied the Hebrew language for 2.5 years. And you know how much I remember? One word, because it's tattooed on my foot.
What?
Osher. It means happiness.
Well, that's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, if I remember only
you
one word, it's a good word.
You remember more if you picked up a book, I'm sure.
So the funny thing about Hebrew school as a kid, or at least where I grew up, is they teach you how to read it, but they don't teach you what anything means. So if, like, you handed me a prayer book, I could actually say everything out
right.
loud, but I couldn't tell you what the words meant.
Oh, that's...
Isn't
not a great way to pass on a language or a culture.
I feel like this is the most bizarre version of Dicey Questions I've ever played.
Sorry.
I love it. That's what I'm here for. All right. Now for the meat of our conversation.
Yes.
Every single ladies' night begins here. What was the movie, the performance you saw, personal experience you had, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I have to be an actor and nothing else?
Yeah. I was around 8 years old, and it was a touring Broadway production of The Music Man. I love musicals. Musical theater is actually my heart, my soul, where I want to end up someday, Broadway. Yeah, it was a touring Broadway production of The Music Man, and I don't really remember much about that show, to be honest, but I remember there's, like, a librarian and a band teacher, and there was a little girl, and she was playing the piano, and she was, like, my age, and I went, oh, my God, little, like, she can do that? I can do that. And now here we are.
So you have that dream. When you decide you actually want to make it your profession, what do you think is step one to becoming a working actor? And now, having done it, would you recommend that as a first step to somebody else who's just starting out?
What? Yeah, I thought the first step was to move. I mean, I was actually pretty strategic for an 18-year-old. I auditioned for school. Like, I wanted to go to musical theater school, get a BFA. I didn't get in anywhere. Boo. I got into one place, but I couldn't afford to go there. The story sounds better if
I
say
like
I didn't
any
get
of those.
In anywhere. Anyway, so I thought, okay, I need to move somewhere, and I'm just going to give TV acting and film acting a try. I'll find somewhere, take some acting classes, and I thought I could move to L.A., I could move to New York. And I thought, no, then I'll be a really small fish in a big pond. I should move somewhere smaller where I can become the big fish in the small pond. So I moved to Portland, Oregon, because it's like they get a few at the time, over 10 years ago, they'd get a few national commercials a year, had a few TV shows. And I thought, I can do that. I can, in like 2 years, I gave myself work on every show and do a few commercials. And luckily, I was right.
You were on Grimm, weren't you?
I was.
Yes, this makes sense.
Yeah, I was on Grimm, and I did a commercial for, like, Obamacare or something. And I had a small part in a movie called Laggies, directed by the late Lynn Shelton.
Great movie. Great
starring
director.
Keira Knightley. And I also just took some acting classes and, like, learned the different way to act on screen versus TV. And then once I got my SAG card, I thought, all right, I did all I could here, and I moved to L.A.
I want to follow up on where you started with that, because I always love discussing going to school or not going to school on this show, because there are so many situations where really talented people just aren't accepted into a program.
Oh my
because
God.
I feel like those auditions don't usually get at like the heart and the essence of what someone's capable of. And then there's also situations where people get in and they can't afford it, which is just such an incredible shame to somebody somebody out there who thinks school is not an option or is wind up being told that school is not an option for them. What is another path they can pursue so they could study their craft, try things out in a safe space, and actually get an opportunity to learn?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question. I mean, these days there are so many resources online. But before I get into that, like, it's just about working on your craft, like you said. So I would say find local theater in your area and do that. Watch stuff like this, watch round tables, learn about the craft, check out the books, study the craft and apply it if you can get into an acting class in your area. And then, like, I hate to say it, but it really is all about online presence these days. So even if it's just like recording some monologues or like throwing a scene up on TikTok or even on Instagram, you actually never know who's going to watch your stuff. And sometimes tagging random people, like, I actually go to my mentions often and will, like, watch the random things I'm tagged in. And, like, there have been times someone has tagged me in something like that, like a monologue or something, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. You never know who might repost it or who might, I don't know, want to, like, who will see it. And then that will open other doors. But it's about your craft at the end of the day.
That is so incredibly true. I love that piece of advice. Especially, that's one thing that I really do appreciate about TikTok now, whether it's someone in that position posting a monologue or even there's like a couple of music artists that I never knew before TikTok.
Same.
But because they came up on my For You page, I bought their music.
Yeah.
Like, I paid to make sure that their incredible work was supported.
Yeah. I think that's how I found Orla Gartland. I think that was TikTok, and she's an Irish singer who tours a lot with Dodi. Anyway, you just never know. To your point, you never know what if you're good at what you do and you put it online, chances are someone will see it.
I love that. I love that positive way of looking online too, because I feel like social media often gets a negative connotation. But like, if you associate with the right people, the right creators, and are exploring the right corners, there's so much to gain from
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, there can be.
Makes me happy. All right, I have a specific person to bring up that I know you gained something from. Regina King. So I was reading an interview you did where I think you called her like your first mentor because she invited you over for dinner and she gave you advice. And I was wondering, can you share one piece of advice she gave you that ultimately you wound up using and it helped you out?
Yeah, I think Regina is very much about like at the time was telling me to be true to myself, you know, just to like stay true to me. And that is really helpful in this industry. There's a lot of, I mean, you know, there's so much going on. As much of it as, like, real, honest conversations, there's just as much make it look like you're having a real, honest conversation. And it's nice to keep the center of who you are.
just having a conversation with Michelle Rodriguez for the show, and she was heavily emphasizing when you start, you draw your lines, and you never cross your lines, because if you cross that line even once, you're more susceptible to doing it again.
Yeah, that's really true. And it's also okay to adjust your lines.
That's a good addition there.
Like, my lines change depending on the seasons of my life. Like, that could even be like a sex scene, for example. Like, I think at the beginning of my career, I would have done pretty much anything. Like, I've been disrobed a few times on screen because it made sense to me. But now when I think about it, there was, like, a scene or two early on where that wasn't really necessary. And so now I'm just not going to unless I think it furthers the story. Or, like, in the case of Yellow Jackets, when Van and Ty are, like, swimming in the lake or whatever, that wasn't necessarily necessary to see these two people without their clothes, but I thought, like, it was a really it just was a beautiful kind of important moment for, like, queer representation, in the sense of, like, we're seeing these straight couples, like, having sexy scenes or being naked all the time. Like, I don't know, how often are we seeing two female characters in an interracial relationship? Just, like, I just thought that was a beautiful image. And it showed the intimacy of their relationship. I'm just thinking about it more now than, like, yeah, I really want the job. It's like, no, does it further the story? Does it mean something to me?
Speaking of queer representation and all different forms of representation, I was reading another interview you had done where you were emphasizing, you know, an interest in producing and getting certain stories that are important to you told on screen.
Yeah.
And it was making me wonder, do you remember the very first time on a professional set where, like, you noticed your voice being heard in a different way, where when you expressed your opinion on something, you could see the power in it, that it could change something and do it for the better?
Yeah, I mean, that's happened a few times. I think something that comes to mind is this season on Yellow Jackets, we've seen more scenes with Thaisa and Akila. And I'm definitely a part of that. Yeah, because, like, let's be honest, if there's two black girls in a group of, and they're the only two, they're gonna stick together, especially in a survival scenario. And Nia and I both believe that that's happening a lot more off screen than we happen to see on screen. But I've been championing that from the beginning, that we see that. And so it's nice that that got taken into account season two. They've had more scenes together.
Oh, that makes me so happy. I can't wait to get to my specific question about one of those scenes. Before I do that, I mean, let's just go to Scream. Everyone out there knows I'm obsessed with this franchise, and I want to ask you about it. I want to ask about Scream 5 first, because yeah. Radio Silence was telling me that for the new characters in Scream 6, they had them all audition with the killer reveal monologue. So it was making me wonder,
that's so
for
cool.
The Scream 5 auditions, did you have to do that?
Oh, pardon me. No, I didn't. But the script I was given, Mindy was the killer in the fifth one. I think each of us got a script where our character was the killer. So I didn't know until a couple weeks before wrap who the killers were. Like, they did or maybe I'm just an idiot. Like, I think most people figured it out.
I know this franchise like the back of my hand, and every single installment has kept me guessing. So you're definitely not an idiot.
Thank you.
I'm curious now, what was the sides? What was her motivation?
Oh, I don't remember, actually, because I read it that one time, but was just so, like, and I think I should go read it again.
I'm so curious to know
feel
what
like
that is.
You could read it. I could send it to you.
It
never got made. Who cares?
It's not canon.
Yeah.
It's not canon. I'm always curious about every single detail, and I love hearing about how these things come together.
Yeah.
All right, so Scream 6 spoilers. We're going to have a nice and pretty spoiler flag up, and
yes.
I feel like everybody watching this knows that I talk about this stuff all the time, so you've seen it, right? I know. All right, so I want to ask about the subway scene first. What was your very first reaction to reading that scene for the first time? Did even you for a second think that that was the end for Mindy?
Yeah, and I was pissed. I was like, no, you need me. You need your Mindy. Yeah, I was scared, but I also thought it would be kind of funny if they just kind of did the same thing again. And I like to believe that in the fifth one, Mindy didn't actually pass out. I like to think she was faking her death, that she, like, got sliced and was like this and then just kind of looked up and saw what was going down and went, nah.
Or she's just such a big horror fan. She got a front row seat to the real deal.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm not going to stop thinking about that.
Maybe.
I would believe that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
All right, two more questions about this particular scene. First, I'm just curious, from a performance perspective, what do you find more challenging? A scene where you're running from the killer and it's a little more action and stunt heavy, or it's something like the subway scene where all the terror and suspense is strictly coming from you standing in the same spot and giving us reaction shots?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, because they're so different. I mean, the almost 30-year-old in me is like, yeah, the running one. Like, that's for 25 and under. But yeah, as an actor, it is a lot of pressure to just be standing there and have to, you know, I'm thinking, okay, music is going to help. How they cut it is going to help. A lot is going to help. But they were definitely like, look more scared.
You nail it. It works really
well. Thank you.
And the whole team does. That scene is exceptionally well cut.
It's so good.
I'm a New Yorker, too. So when I first heard
it, the subway for you?
I mean, the subway was ruined for a million other reasons. But, I mean, it kind of makes it a little more exciting to me.
Oh, my God.
Keeps me on my toes a little bit. No. But really, the way that was used, that was a top priority as a New Yorker to see that kind of scare scene explored in that location the right way.
Yeah.
And they
killed it.
Okay, here's my next question about that one. And the answer to this could just be a flat-out no. But when you read that she's in a scene that could imply to the audience that, like, she's stabbed to the point that realistically she would be dead, do you feel any pressure yourself through your performance to justify her survival?
Oh, that's funny. I should say yes. You know, it's we joke amongst the core four about Chad surviving, because that man got stabbed
a lot.
And we joke about Mindy surviving. I think we joke about all of them surviving, really, and we just say they have like a special blanket. They put on the special blanket and all their wounds heal.
I phrase that question that way because I'm usually like a stickler for rules and stuff, but I think it's really something special when you need to have that suspension of disbelief, but
yeah,
the actors earn that love from the audience to the point that doesn't matter and you're just so happy and relieved to see your favorite character survive.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I think that's a really special accomplishment.
Thank you.
So many more questions. A third act question, just a theory question, or maybe not a theory. Maybe this will happen in 7. How do you think Mindy would feel if she found out that Sam suspected, even for a second, that she was the killer in the third act reveal?
That's such a good question. I think she'd be a bit honored. I think she'd be pissed, but also honored. Like, oh, wow, me? Thank you.
But how dare you?
Classic Mindy comedy reversal where she's like, haha, no.
That is an A-plus answer to that.
Thank you.
So going into screen, like, can they just announce it and confirm it already? You guys did so well. It's a great movie.
Well,
did really well. Everybody loves it. I'm rooting for it. Looking ahead, if that movie happens, going out of Scream 6... Rephrasing, going into Scream 6, actually, what do you think Mindy thinks her greatest strength in one of these scenarios is? And now, assuming Scream 7 happens, going into that new movie, what do you think she thinks her greatest strength is?
I think going into 6, I think she thought her greatest strength was her knowledge, was her, like, lineage, but also her brain and how studied she is. But given that she was a bit slow and missed one of the killers in 6, I think going into 7, if there is a 7, that maybe she would think her greatest strength is the bond, like is the core mm-hmm. four. Right?
Core four is so special.
It is.
So special. Because it's like, I'm sure you know, it's a pretty hot topic of conversation for hardcore fans. Like, how do you ever evolve beyond the big three? And I love 5, but 6 in a special yeah. way solidified that we are okay to move on because we have the core four now.
Wow. That's really huge.
It is.
To hear.
It is. And having that conversation and knowing a lot of the fandom feels that way makes me very happy.
Wow. Thanks for saying that.
Now, your next thing that I'm full-blown obsessed with. I have abused my screeners for Yellow Jackets. I have watched my screeners so many times that when I started preparing for this particular interview, I got an alert that said, you have hit your maximum
oh, no.
on these. Stop watching them.
So you watched each episode 5 times. Is it 5?
To be completely honest, I didn't watch them all the way through 5 times,
okay,
but I've prepared for many an interview, and I always like to go back and refer to particular
yeah,
lines and, you know, rewatch at least with one particular character's arc in mind.
Yeah.
But then the fine folks at Showtime refreshed, so I watched all of Jasmine's scenes, all of your scenes all over again.
Oh, wow.
Okay, but before I even get to the new season, I want to go back to the very beginning, the audition. What would you say is the biggest difference between how you pictured Thaisa when you auditioned for the role for the first time and then who she became as you started shooting the season and got to explore her more?
Oh, that's a good question. Back at the audition, I didn't know she was going to be so serious. Like, she's just so serious all the time. Girl, relax. Unless she's with Van in the younger generation. I didn't know she was so dark and serious. But I think that is partly the writing, but also it must just be something in me that I brought to the role. Yeah, because the audition scenes were just about, they were both on the soccer field talking about what to do about Allie. It's just very teenagery stuff. I think that is a big difference. Episode 1, they're very much teenagers. And then 2-1, they're teenagers in crisis. So, like, in a way, they're adults, but they're also children. Like, we never really get to – we don't get to see the teens mm-hmm. that much after episode 1.
They lost out on all those teen years or
yeah.
teen time, whatever time is between the crash and –
Yeah, teen time.
Turning
I like
20.
Teen time.
Yeah, I'm just going to start saying that for no reason now. You brought up Van, so I'll go to Liv next. So we were talking about this at the junket. What Liv did with their performance is basically act their way into a major series-long arc, I would assume, and not having the character die in season 1, which is very, very special. Do you remember the very first time you two shared a scene on set where you felt that? Like, you kind of stopped and said to yourself, like, damn, they're doing something really special and the show can't let go of it?
That's a great question. I mean, all of the scenes with Liv are really fun. They like to improv sometimes. They bring a really special energy to set and to their character. I mean, we had a lot of fun. The first thing that comes to mind is the wolf attack, which is kind of ironic because that's when, like, they would be dead. So prior to that, I would say the first time that Ty and Van are, like, making out against the tree and we're just seeing something, a different side of each of them in private, it felt like the heart of the show in a way. And Liv brought that sparkle, that Butch King energy that I see people calling Van online. It's
really?
So funny. Yeah. Someone said, imagine being Thaisa Turner and you fumbled the bag with a sexy Butch King in your teens and then also with, like, a hot femme queen in your 40s.
Oh, my God.
Like, imagine.
What a harsh assessment. Jeez.
But it's true, though.
I guess so. No, it is,
like,
true.
Damn, Thaisa.
It is true. I'll stick with that relationship because you get what, or at least from an outsider's perspective, I think could be one of the hardest lines to deliver when you're acting, when you have an I love you scene.
Oh.
It's just, it feels to me like a really difficult thing to say that in a
yeah.
way that feels sincere,
yeah,
but not overly sentimental.
Yes.
What was it like trying to figure out the right tone for her to say I love you back?
I tried to not think about it too much. And I thought Thaisa would just, like, underplay this, casually, like, sweep it under the rug, try to throw it away, you know, like, just that energy. And I hope it landed.
It felt very real to me.
Okay, good.
It really is a beautiful moment. And their relationship is above and beyond one of my favorite parts of this show.
Thank you.
Many other things I need to hit on, though. Season two, I guess this is episode 2/3, the eating scene and the aftermath. I was just wondering, it's more of a theory than anything. Do you think that Thaisa, if she were not under control of the other when they were eating, if she was her real self, would she have eaten?
That's a really good question. You know what? That's so interesting. I wonder if her moral high ground would have had her wanting to say no. But I also think that she would have thought through, like, how are we going to survive the winter? This might be our only option. I could see her going back and forth, but I could see her ultimately doing it, or at least pretending to do it, simply to not become Ben Scott. Like, you can't be the one who didn't in a group like this, like in a survival situation.
For so many reasons.
You have to at least fake it so that no one gets mad at you, you know?
Now, or like, he's ostracized now and he's weak.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she threw up all the food the next day.
Yeah.
Just like, girl, could you not keep it down?
Speaking of which, damn. Ever since our last conversation, when I rewatched that, I'm like, oh, it's stew.
Yeah.
I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
Those are the details that
Chunky
I think
stew.
About. Yeah. Yeah. I also found out that I think Livid said there was one other person who asked about the eat the face line at the junket. And when I went back in the hospitality, you know who the other person who asked that question?
What?
My best friend.
Oh, really?
Like, we're in the same wavelength. I like this. All right, let's go. Ooh, I'm up to my Aquila question. So the one that I wanted to focus on in particular was in episode 3 when they were making gifts for the baby shower. And
yeah.
And Aquila tells her about her, I believe it's her nephew.
Yeah.
Is there anything that kind of changes Ty's mentality hearing about that? Because I feel like for the most part, Ty is, you know, very focused on like her main missions from season 1, her personal feelings, her feelings about Van and all that kind of thing. So what is it like for her and how does it change her when she hears about a deeply personal thing that someone else is going through?
Yeah, I think that's just more weight on her back. Like it's yet another person that she feels like responsible for, because I think in a way, you know, she tried to rescue everybody. She tried to leave to find a way out because she felt like the responsibility of all of these people's lives on her shoulders. And just like she's aware that everyone has families and people that love her, but hearing about it just makes that burden heavier.
Do you think she also feels at all, like I know she's kind of leaning a little more towards Lottie at this point, but do you think she feels at all responsible for encouraging Aquila to lean in that direction too?
Ooh, yeah, totally. Oh God, yeah. You should come on set and ask these questions on set. Yeah, for sure. Like for better or worse, whatever's going to come from this Lottie thing. Like I think in a way it's like, okay, good. Now Aquila has like a purpose. She has something she can focus on. She has something she can find meaning in. In a way, it's like a weight off. All right, she's taken care of. But then it's also like, if this goes wrong, it's my fault. So that's a lot.
She blames herself for everything.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you're a caretaker, though, and you take that seriously.
Yeah.
All right, here's a question that might be unanswerable, because I don't even know how much you know for sure in terms of
nothing.
The... Yeah, I
know basically nothing.
Probably. When you're doing scenes as the other, how much, like, are you as the actor playing the other thinking about the flashback scenes for like super young Ty and her grandmother and the first encounter with the man with no eyes?
You know, I am not. I'm not thinking about it a lot because I still don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm just as in the dark as you are on what is going to happen with the no-eyed man and the sleepwalking, et cetera. And every time we shot it, we shot all those scenes out of order, first of all. And then secondly, it was just different every time. Like sometimes she is following the no-eyed man. Sometimes he's not there. And so then I'm thinking, does she see him even though he's not here? Or is he never there? And she's being pulled by, like, I don't know. So I kind of just do something different every single time. And then I let the editors figure it out.
Is there anything, given the way the show is shot and given the way that you're you're fed information on what's really going on. Is there anything that you felt compelled to ask the showrunners about in a way that, you know, was like I need this information in order for her to feel whole for the rest of the series?
That's a good question. I don't really think so. No, I've just kind of gotten used to assuming that I'm not going to get any information because they have it very on lock and key. But sometimes someone, usually a director, would like whisper something. For example, I didn't know that Ty is sleep eating Jackie. Like, I didn't, that wasn't clear in the script. Huh. So on the day when we shot just like Ty and Van sitting up and walking out of the room, the director was like, by the way, you're sleepwalking. I was like, that's really good to know, dude. Thank you. I think, yeah, it's just a really huge cast. So a lot of stuff gets lost along the way in terms of getting us information, but they also don't want us to know.
It's TV magic. I mean, yeah. The showrunners were explaining to me during the interview, like, a lot of the things that you have to do during the production are wholly dependent on reasonably keeping a show like this up and running in terms of resources, in terms of having creative freedom to adjust things as you keep going on. And I don't know, at least from the standpoint of someone who's seen through episode 6 of season 2, the fact that things seem to align as well as they do is mind-blowing to me.
It's magic.
I don't understand that. This is kind of a somewhat similar question, so I don't know if you're going to have an answer for this one either. But when you're playing the other, do you have to decide on what the other's goals are just to justify the other's actions as you're walking through them?
I will, just for that moment. Like, I don't want to get too deep into the motivations, et cetera, of the other, because I don't want to go off the rails. And those scenes are so quick that I just go based on what the other wants in that moment, which is like either to find, how much do we know by episode 6? I mean, walking to the trees.
Yeah, episode 6 is the most devastating episode I've seen yet.
So, yeah, like whether it's like to find a symbol on a tree or if it's to follow the no-eyed man, just that simple.
Here's a specific one. What about when the other tells Van, yes, come?
Yeah, God, right?
That's the moment that really put that idea in my mind.
Yeah, what was I thinking? You know, again, when I don't have information, I'll just try something different every single take. Like, that's just kind of the way that I am as an actor anyway. Mm-hmm. Unless the director is like, that stay exactly in that lane. Even then, still, I don't want to do it the same every time. So I'll keep my motivation but do something slightly different. When I know nothing, I make a different choice every take. So on some of them, it was sinister. On some, it was like, oh, that's a good idea. On some, it was, yeah, you can help me. So it just kind of depends on what they end up going with.
Whether it's Yellow Jackets or anything that you've done, can you give me an example of two, like, polar opposite takes you brought to a particular scene where maybe ultimately what the editor and the directors chose surprised you?
Yeah, well, that is one. I'm trying to think. What was there something recently in Yellow Jackets? Off the top of my head, I'm so hard when I'm on the spot.
Oh, I know.
The one I just gave is like the first thing that can come to mind. Like, just very different. Or, yeah, I think, no, we still don't know that. Anyway, there's something that happens later on where there's a big discovery that's a bit heartbreaking. And in one version, I did like a shocked and horrified take. And then in another, it was a bit more like humored. Hmm. Which can come off as, but depending on how that's edited, that could look so many ways. When someone laughs in the face of a discovery, it can seem sinister. It can seem they're losing it. And I haven't seen those episodes yet, so I don't know what they picked.
I'm, like, so curious what it winds up being. And when I do get those episodes, you know I will watch them 5 times and overanalyze that particular beat. Touching on Lottie now in particular. So in this season, it seems like Ty's had multiple opportunities to kind of teeter more and more towards following Lottie's teachings. Is there any particular thing that happened that you think pushed her in that direction the most? Like I had noted down, you know, when they find Travis and there is something deep inside of you that's connected to all this. Like, is that the thing that made her believe?
I'm not convinced she believes.
Okay.
Like, I know people keep saying that, oh, well, when she says that Lottie cured her sleepwalking, I still think that she might think that was kind of a fluke. Like, I'm not of the belief that Thaisa fully believes.
Okay.
I'm just not.
Here's another thing that's tied to that that I don't know if you'll be able to answer, but given what goes down in episode 6 when they do all of those rituals and those sacrifices and the baby still dies, is that ultimately going to have Ty veer in the other direction where even if she had the slightest bit of belief, that's all gone now?
Possibly, yeah. Mm, I mean, I think that I've heard the showrunners say that Thaisa is an atheist, if anything. Like, if anything, she doesn't believe in anything, spiritual, woo-woo, whatever. And maybe she was open to it a bit with the Lottie of it all. But exactly, when the baby doesn't make it, it's like, no, I was right. Nothing exists. We just need to survive. We just need to get through the winter.
My heart. I can't stop thinking of episode 6. I'll end with this. It's more of a scene partner question and basically an opportunity for me to say this out loud on camera again. Sophie and Elise needs an Emmy nomination.
I agree.
Needs an Emmy nomination. That is an incredibly difficult episode for all of you, but she is at the center, the core of it.
Yeah.
What did you strive to do for her as a scene partner so that she could crush this really challenging material?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to be present with her every time. I mean, and I'm sure you've heard the story, maybe not, that we had to shoot a lot of that episode 6 twice. We shot most of the birth stuff, the losing the baby, all of that, and then the camera wiped. It was the worst day of a lot of our lives, no exaggeration. Because it took like 4 days to shoot that scene. The screaming, the crying, the baby, the blood, the close-ups, and then like 40% of it just vanished and we had to do it again.
Oh my God, my heart crumbles for
it was
everyone
awful.
Everyone involved.
Yeah.
Everyone involved.
So I just wanted to be present for Sophie and for everyone and just really be there, even if I was off camera. Just like sometimes looking in another actor's eyes is what will get the emotion going again. I just always want to be there for her.
You never want that to happen. But on the bright side, I feel
still
like
still turned out good.
And I feel like I'm not the only one saying that about the Emmy situation.
Oh, no.
So it's got to make everyone feel good. This has become my favorite question to end on. Whether it's Yellowjacket, Scream, or anything you've done, I want you to tell me about one particular scene that makes you now say, like, damn, I'm really proud of what I did there. Because I feel like in this industry, like we're just talking about Emmys, we're pretty good at giving other people awards, but we don't really say good job to ourselves nearly enough.
That's a good question. Well, you know, I haven't rewatched The Leftovers in a long time, but I remember feeling really proud about, what was her name? It was in like the other world in season 3 when Evie was playing a girl, Danya, was that her name?
I think so.
I can't remember. And all of that with Kevin. I'm really proud of the work I did in that episode.
I've only just gotten better at not calling the Yellow Jackets cast their character name or like vice versa.
Yeah.
Like I have a really hard time lately.
It's a lot of names to keep
with
track
changing
of.
Names and not saying what I mean. It's a sign that everyone's so good. And I can't tear you all away, friends. It's the same thing with Scream, too.
Thank you.
Every character feels very specific to the actor that was cast in that role, and it makes it very much something special
Good.
That I adore. I have to let you go. But I have a million
lovely.
More questions, and that just means you have to come back to Ladies Night sometime
oh, darn
soon.
It.
Congratulations. Congratulations on Scream, Yellow Jackets, everything you accomplished, and everything that's coming your way in the future.
Thank you. We'll do this again.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.